Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and I've got with me Jack Shepherd.
Hello.
And also Matt Matum.
Hello.
Coming up this episode, we'll be talking to the Ladybird gang, Greta Gerwig, Timothy Chalamet and Saoirse Ronan about reuniting for Little Women. We'll be appraising Jumanji 2. Has it taken it to the next level or is it game over? And we'll be looking forward to No Time to Die and The Rise of Skywalker. Okay, so let's get going then with a redo of a classic.
This is Meg, Amy, Beth, and Joe.
I intend to make my own way in the world.
No one makes their own way, least of all a woman. You'll need to marry well.
But you are not married, aren't you?
Well, that's because I'm rich.
Joe, would you like to dance with me?
I can't because I scorched my dress, and Meg told me to keep still so no one would see it.
I have an idea of how we can manage.
That was Little Women. That's Louisa May Alcott's classic story written and directed by Ladybird's creator, Greta Gerwig, and reuniting the stars of that film, Saoirse Ronan and Timothy Chalamet. So Matt, tell us who they're playing this time around. It's not Kyle and Ladybird.
No.
Who are they essaying this time?
Well, I'm actually someone who was new to Little Women. I hadn't seen any of the previous versions or read the book, so this was all new to me. And Saoirse is playing one of the March sisters, Jo. She's the lead character and she has aspirations of being an author. And so it's set in the 19th century during the American Civil War. And these four March sisters live in the same house with their mommy, played by Laura Dern. And Timothy Chalamet plays Laurie, who's the guy next door, could we say?
He's quite literally the boy next door.
And it follows them over a number of years and how their relationships develop and the relationships between the sisters and Laurie with different sisters.
Yeah, it's about women growing up and realising their potential in whatever that might be. So we had a chat to the stars of the film. Our Hollywood correspondent, Adam Tanswell, caught up with Greta, Saoirse and Timothy to talk about this project. And he began by asking Greta why she wanted to make this film.
Well, Jo was my heroine when I was growing up. She was my favorite character. She was the reason that I thought I could be a writer. She was kind of my North Star. And the book was so important to me. And I read it and reread it. And these girls felt like my sisters. And this story felt like my story. So to get the opportunity to make this movie the way I wanted was just an extraordinary gift.
So the way that she wanted to make this movie, as she told me when I talked to her for Total Film, was with a lot of modernity. So Adam asked her how she pulled a whimsical, cozy classic into the 21st century.
Well, I think so many of the themes that are in the book are so modern, and I felt like so many of the lines just jumped out at me as if they could have been written yesterday, like the character of Amy, played by Florence Pugh, saying, "I want to be great or nothing," or Marmee saying, "I'm angry almost every single day." Those seem like incredibly modern sentiments, and I felt like there was something just so fresh about the language, and then on top of that, the themes of the book, and how this theme of women and money and ambition, and where does that go if the world is not big enough to hold it, is something that I think we're still coming up against today, and it's something that women keep growing into, and I think I felt like there was an opportunity to make something with a slightly different focus, and that was both emotional but also intellectually resonant.
Greta also told me that Saoirse had actively campaigned to play Jo during the award season for Ladybird. So we asked Saoirse why she was so keen to play this role.
I think more than anything, I wanted to get the opportunity to play a character like Jo and to do it with Greta, to do it with a director that I trusted so much and I was so excited by working with. So it was the first time that I've ever been sort of that forward when it comes to going out and pursuing a role, you know.
So why does she trust Gerwig so much? What makes her special as a filmmaker?
What's so special about her as a filmmaker and what really kind of informs the way she works is the fact that she comes from acting. She's an actor, she's used to working on stage, and I think she has done so many sort of like small independent films as well where everyone's really had to pull together and get the work done. So she's got a really sort of like collaborative approach to filmmaking. I think with Little Women, even more so than Lady Bird, we had such a definite structure to each scene through the dialogue and how the dialogue was written, and that we knew sort of when we needed to overlap, when each character exactly needed to come in. But then within that, structure, we could really sort of explore the scene, and we could play around with where we wanted to take each beat, you know. So it was a very exciting film set to be on.
Gerwig later approached Timothy Chalamet to recreate that Ladybird triangle, but had he read the book?
Of course, yeah. I didn't read it in grade school and in high school. It seems I'm learning on this tour that seems to be customary in America. But once Greta reached out with it, and I read it. I read it after the script, so I knew it was happening. But
and what did you think the first time you read it?
It's incredible, and its relevance is both obvious and also in the cracks of the book, and it just felt like an honor. It feels almost, I feel like legitimate to talk about the movie because I'm in it, but when it comes to talking about the book, I feel daunted because, not in discussion, whatever, but in anything beyond talking about how great it is.
And Adam asked him how he was reacting to his current popularity.
You're everywhere. You're the internet's boyfriend. How does that
make Keanu Reeves was the internet's boyfriend. No. I don't know. I've been working a lot, so I haven't been too self-aware. And I just want to work on great. I want to work with great directors, and I want to work on great projects. So anything that can help facilitate that is great.
So that was Timothy Chalamet.
Thank you, Jack.
And so I haven't seen Little Women. Both of you have.
Yes.
Now, there's been a lot of chat in the office about this film because everyone's been raving about it who has seen it. Are you two in agreement that it's great, as good as Lady Bird, if perhaps better?
I would say it's a 5-star nailed-on classic in the making. I loved it. I thought it was extremely interesting what Gerwig had done with a novel that's quite fusty and cosy, and she'd made it really modern. That whole modernity that she talks about is there in the way they sort of talk over each other and they're fighting and the things that they do. That when Joe has a dance with Laurie, you remember this, Matt, they're sort of dancing outside, and they're dancing in a really sort of modern way, and even the music is slightly sort of has that tinge of a modern musical score. So it feels very relatable, and I don't know that that's the case with previous adaptations. What did you think?
Well, I liked it, but not quite as much as you. And I didn't like it as much as I liked Lady Bird, which for me was a 5-star film. But this was more of what I'd call a solid 4. As someone who's new to the book and any previous films, I wasn't convinced by Greta Gerwig's decision to do this kind of time-jumping structure. Especially in the first half, it leaps about a lot between kind of the girls when they're much younger and then when they're a few years older. And I found it really hard to get a kind of footing on where I was at times, especially as they don't change how they look all that much in these sort of intervening
years. Yeah,
see,
it's like if you're older, you've got a bun in your hair.
Yeah.
And if you're younger, you've got it in plaits or something. That seems to be the only sort of criteria for knowing where you were.
And I struggled to grasp that sort of hair code. So I was
there was a hair code on this film.
And I was just a bit lost, and actually took me out of it in the first half. But then it really, really did come together in the second half for me.
Do you think you have to be kind of aware of the novel, or at least have read it, to properly understand the timeline jump then? Because it sounds quite confusing.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's why it didn't bother me, because I knew this story so well because I've read it as a kid a lot. I guess if you haven't, it is confusing maybe.
Who's the best sister in it? I've heard a lot of hype about Florence Pugh.
It's apparently totally Florence Pugh.
Really?
I mean, Saoirse's amazing and she is brilliant in this. And Eliza Scanlon's really good. But it's about Pugh, really, because the thing that she does with this role, which is amazing, is in the past, Amy, her character that she plays, is this brattish child who's very selfish and sort of grows up to become sort of a quite prim woman wanting to just get married to a rich man. And that's not a very attractive character. And in the past, that's how she's sort of been played. But Florence Pugh manages to turn that around and make her understandable and very sort of magnetic and feisty, and you really actually like her and root for her in that endeavor. And I think that's an amazing sort of achievement on her part.
It does feel like her next step to becoming a proper star after like Midsummer earlier this year. Yeah, it feels like she's a serious talent.
She can do anything. And then she's obviously going to be in Black Widow. So it just feels like she's going to be like tick off the crinoline skirts, tick off the indie horror, tick off the superhero. And, you know, what's next? I mean, I think she'll probably get nominations during awards season.
You have Meryl Streep in this film and Laura Dern, who I hear are both great as well. Are they major roles in this, or are they kind of side players with all the main ladies at the centre?
I would class them as supporting roles, definitely, but they're considerable supporting roles. Laura Dern, I really like. She's really warm as the kind of mum of this group, and you really do believe those family interactions between the sisters and the mum. Meryl, I have to admit, I found a bit of a distraction. I'm getting to that point where when Meryl pops up in a cameo for her kind of guaranteed nomination, it just takes me out of it a bit. And I know some people who say they feel similar about people like Tilda Swinton now, where they're just in this kind of fun cameo, slightly sort of showy role. And yeah, I was just a bit like, ugh, when Meryl turned up.
She's very Meryl in it.
Very.
But then
Meryl.
I love a bit of Meryl, so I'm happy when she turns up and does Meryl.
That sounds quite fun. I'm down for a bit of Meryl.
But, you know, let's not forget, it's not just about the ladies. There are some amazing guys in this that are feminists in their own right, which is quite lovely. And as much as all the men in this film are there to support and love the women, and they just want the very best for them, there's no bad guys in this. It's all really supportive men. There's obviously Timothy Chalamet as Laurie.
I thought it was one of his best performances as well. He gets to be really varied in it.
He's delightful. It's a delightful performance.
And then you've got Bob Odenkirk, who has a kind of large cameo, I'd say, as the March father.
And Chris Cooper as the gentleman next door who sort of admires and loves all of the sisters. And Louis Garrel has the sort of love interest.
Yeah, he was very good as well.
And they're all excellent. So it's not, I would like to say, a ladies' film, which I think you might think that is a sort of girls' movie on a Boxing Day.
Well, I did think it was just about very tiny women.
Very tiny women,
but
yeah.
Turns out it's not. I also heard that, not to go into spoilers, but the ending isn't the same as the book. Is it a justified, therefore, ending, like made for like a modern era? Is it kind of something that just works for the 21st century?
It's a mild diversion from the book, and it's still it's very true to the sort of ethics of the character that you're talking about. So I don't think you'd mind it if you were a diehard fan.
So it's not going to be controversial?
No, and it actually just makes her particular endeavours more rich, I would say, without giving anything away.
Intriguing.
So will you be seeing it, Jack? Will you be seeing it on Boxing Day, or will you be face down in a Bailey's?
I will definitely be seeing this film. I'm desperate to see it. I'm upset I missed all the screenings, but yeah, I can't wait. I think me and the family are going to go along. It feels quite Christmassy, at least seems that way. So I think it'll be a good little family watch.
Great. Okay, right then. From crinoline skirts on Boxing Day to Avatars on the 13th of December, let's take a look at Jumanji, The Next Level.
I think he went back in. We got to go get him.
Are you out of your mind? We haven't even picked our guys yet.
Oh, I hate this part. All right.
You hear something?
Huh? Spencer.
Huh?
What?
Who are you?
Oh, my God.
You're Spencer's grandfather.
Are we in Florida?
And you?
My little Walker. Did I die and turn into some kind of a small, muscular Boy Scout?
Are we dead?
Bethany?
No!
Rich?
I'm the old fat dude. This can't be happening!
My hip sure feels good now.
Look at my thighs.
Look at your thighs.
Look at my thighs.
Okay, we have some issues here. The game is busted.
It was a game. I'm not it. I don't want to be it.
Welcome to Jumanji.
So this is Jumanji 2. Obviously, the first one was a huge success. It was the sleeper hit that came out of opposite the last Star Wars film. And it did huge business. Is this one going to do the same?
I reckon it's going to do pretty well, but I didn't like it as much as I liked the first one. I think because the first one had such low expectations of it, really, because everyone loved the original. It had been a long time. It was basically a video game movie. It's opening against Star Wars, pretty much. So no one really was expecting much from it. And then when it actually turned out to be pretty funny and inventive, it was like a really nice treat. And it felt like a rare family adventure film that wasn't just kind of following the superhero mold, or so it felt a bit different and felt very fun.
Well, for people who haven't seen it, just a quick recap of what it's actually about.
So to recap the first one, basically these four teenage friends get sucked into a video game of Jumanji, and they kind of playing as these avatars who are very different to what they're like. So the kind of geeky teen is Smolder Bravestone, who's Dwayne the Rock Johnson, and this spoiled girl is trapped in the body of Jack Black as a geeky professor. So there's a kind of body swap element to it, as well as the action and fun.
So what happens in this one, Jack, instead? What's the difference?
So the difference is there is a difference. It's that the kids go into different people's bodies, so their avatars are different this time round. And you also have Danny DeVito and Danny Glover, who are also sucked into the world of Jumanji. Danny DeVito's in the body of The Rock, and it's very, very funny watching The Rock do a Danny DeVito impression. At least I thought it was quite funny.
Is it, though? Because that was my issue. I liked that for 10 minutes. I didn't want... I think it was about 40 that he did it before something else happened.
You are right. Like, it was fun watching people do impressions of people. Like, watching Kevin Hart do an impression of Danny Glover was quite funny for a bit.
Talking very slowly.
He does that very well.
Yeah, and it was good. But then, you're right, after a while, you kind of were ready for it to move on. I think everyone's going to come for what the magic of the first movie, like the matchups worked so well. Here they arguably work less well, and it's kind of playing more with the gimmick and makes it feel a bit more of like a gimmicky film rather than a proper adventure. I mean, it could have done with a severe edit.
It was a bit long.
It's very slow to get going as well. I think that was a major problem for it, that it was funny at first, Dwayne doing Danny DeVito and Kevin Hart doing Danny Glover, but yeah, it really outstays its welcome because it's quite a limited one-note gag. There's only sort of so many times you can hear Dwayne Johnson doing his Danny DeVito sort of type voice that after a while you're like, come on. But then I did think it did manage to just about find its footing in the second half. So I think people will come out thinking, yeah, that was good fun, but I don't think it will have the revisit value that the previous films had.
But it does have some pretty good sort of action set pieces, though. There has one particular scene with them trying to cross multiple bridges with sort of baboons, monkeys trying to swing off them, and it's sort of like, it's very video gamey. It really sort of does pay tribute to its sort of gaming background, but there just doesn't seem to be enough of that for me.
Yeah, it didn't really work as a whole for me. I'd had fun with it. I mean, I was sitting next to you and we were watching it.
Yeah.
And you weren't laughing at all. I was
I laughed once, I think.
You laughed once, like towards the end. Yeah. I think when Jack Black's like doing his funny shtick again.
Do you know why? Because Jack Black was back doing the thing that he did in the first one. And
yeah.
That's what...
But he's, you know, MVP of this film, isn't he? Because he is so funny. But yeah, I mean, I was sitting next to you and then my girlfriend was on the other side and she was cackling along. So I was like, who do I trust?
The jaded film journalist.
Yeah, exactly. I think people will have fun with it because it's like grown men doing funny voices. But I see the inherent problem of just the film is how long is it? 2.5 hours nearly?
Well, it certainly felt like that.
I also think it suffers by doing too many callbacks to the last film where... Yeah. It just didn't need it. Like, we didn't need Nick Jonas to come back. You chop him out and you've saved yourself 15 minutes already. And it just was completely unnecessary. And Rhys Darby, why bring him back as this NPC non-player character and not have him do anything particularly funny? Because he's so funny when he has something good. He's someone who I can just laugh hysterically almost whatever
but
he says.
But he literally has to repeat one line over and over and over again.
It feels very token, like, oh, well, people like the first film, so let's bring back every single thing that they liked about the first one.
Yeah, there were some callback jokes that... I mean, I saw the first one so long ago. I mean, well, when it came out 2 years ago. I'd just forgotten. There was, like, you know, the bit with the cake. And it was kind of like, oh, this is so funny because it was in the last film. And I was like, is it that funny? Not sure.
And you're sitting there for quite a few seconds and you're like, oh yeah, I vaguely remember that from the last one. But
and when the music comes on in one scene as well and you're like, it's supposed to be...
Yeah, I'd forgotten that thing as well. So maybe when people go to see this, they need to do a little refresher course before they go in the cinema.
Yeah, and maybe there are just some really hardcore Jumanji fans out there.
Yeah.
Very excited for the Jumanji 3, I guess.
Which is no doubt incoming. Although that depends on how well it does against Rise of Skywalker. Okay, so that was Jumanji 2, out on Friday the 13th. Now let's look ahead to this small independent movie.
James Bond. License to Kill. History of Violence. I could be speaking to my own reflection. Only your skills die with your body. Mine will survive long after I'm gone.
History isn't kind to men who play God.
So, this is No Time to Die, the new James Bond, the 25th James Bond. and that's incoming, and we've just had this amazing trailer. Obviously, we were all a little bit sort of suspicious of whether this would be any good before that trailer came out, because we've had, you know, a change in director, we've had injuries, we've had delays, we had the launch from Jamaica that was a live launch that was all the sound was off and everything sort of was a bit hokey. And
they didn't even have a title by then. Yeah,
no title. And it just felt like, God, is this going to be terrible? And then this trailer dropped. For me, I was like, yes, this is Bond back to his best. What did you think?
I thought it really worked. I thought it was action-packed. I feel like it didn't show too much somehow, even though I know some people were complaining that they thought it was filled with spoilers, but it didn't feel like it showed even the last third or last half of the film, because Rami Malek's barely in that trailer as the main villain.
I don't feel like I've seen the whole film just from that trailer.
No, definitely not.
But I do feel like I've seen some amazing tasters for stunts.
Yeah.
Like the bit with the bike when he jumps a wall and falling off a bridge, and it looks like it's going to be action-packed.
And just some really cool moments as well, like the miniguns coming out of the headlights of the Aston and then him spinning it around. It was just like, oh my God, like, why
all
is
the toys are back,
before?
The toys.
Yeah. Genuinely kind of like, spine tingling stuff, a lot of that trailer.
And there's some, you know, pretty cool, strong women in this as well. The new 007 looks badass and very snarky, and she doesn't look like she's going to give him any room for error. I love that. I can't wait to see those two face off.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure how Ana de Armas fits into it all. She does seem like another kind of femme fatale Bond girl again, which I kind of thought we were moving away from, but it does feel like they've put her in there as that.
I'm interested to see that, though, because there's an interesting piece by our news editor, Jordan Farley, on GamesRadar.com right now that you can read. An interview with the director, Cary Joji Fukunaga. And he says, in relation to this character played by Ana de Armas, that Phoebe Waller-Bridge was working on her character and that they brought her in quite late. So that, to me, I think, surely there's going to be something unexpected there. Surely Phoebe Waller-Bridge is going to come up with some twist on that seemingly stereotypical character that's going to make us see it in a different light.
Yeah, I hope so. Because, I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is such a talent. Fleabag's been amazing. Killing Eve's been amazing. So it'd be really interesting to see how she's brought Bond girls into the 21st century. Because it has been a long time since we've had Vespa, basically.
Oh,
who's
Vespa,
the only good
one. The best
one.
Bond girl.
Yeah. I mean, we've had they say you do, you know, Bond films, good one, bad one, good one, bad one.
And this is the good.
Hopefully.
Yeah, we're in that cycle. Okay, so that looks good. And that's Bond 25. I think we can all agree that we're feeling optimistic about it incoming on the 3rd of April.
Very much.
So from one anticipated film to another.
Confronting fear is the destiny of a Jedi. Your destiny.
That was Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, and we now know when we're going to see this film, which is next week.
By
the time we're talking again for our next podcast, we will be talking all about that film and knowing everything we need to know about it. But for now, what are we hoping that we're going to get to see next week when we sit down in the dark for that famous title music?
I'm hoping it's not bad. I mean, everyone's hoping that, but also I'm so, so excited for this film, but at the same time, just hugely nervous because it is ending the trilogy of trilogies. It's
the whole
up
Skywalker saga.
Yeah, so much pressure.
Which has meant so much to so many of us. And so it feels like, I just don't know how they can do it in a way that will be like nicely rounding off, not just like Rey's story, but then also Anakin's and Luke's and then Ben Skywalker's as well. There's so many bits still in play, and then bringing back the Emperor and Lando, and then you've got Leia who's still in it, and they're using reused footage from Force Awakens.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that that's not going to feel cheap or sort of like they're cashing in on her in any way. I'm hoping that that feels really integral and that it does really serve her as a character and also Carrie Fisher and her sort of her legacy. So I really hope they treat that well. What about you, Matt?
I'm hoping, Jack touched upon this, but I'm hoping we get a really satisfying arc for Kylo Ren / Ben Solo, because he's really walked a tightrope in the first couple of films where he's felt right on the verge of redemption a couple of times, but he's also done some very bad things like killing his own dad, Han.
That was kind of bad, yeah.
But I feel like there's got to be some kind of satisfying arc from there. So I'm very intrigued to see how his story wraps up. And because I think he has been a really great addition as a character, I think he's been one of the strongest new characters. I hope he gets a satisfying send-off one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I've really enjoyed all the new characters. I think Rey, Poe, Finn and Kylo have all been pretty great. And I feel like it's almost a shame to be leaving them here, because the movies have been in such quick succession as well. And what's really weird about Force Awakens going into Last Jedi was that those are two films, even though they obviously came out years apart, but timeline wise in the Star Wars universe, they're so close together. This is a movie that's finally coming out. It's a year time jump from that one. It's the first time we're going to really see them, and they'll be different to what we've seen before, or at least you'd hope so.
I mean, I do hope that old Rey gets a different outfit. I think she must be bored of that one.
She's getting a red lightsaber.
Yeah, I know. So I'm hoping there's at least one other as well.
Well, she'll have to keep the main outfit from Force Awakens most of the time, because the scene she shoots with Leia, because they're reusing the footage, they've had to dress her up in the same way as she was in that film, so they can kind of make it all blend together seamlessly. So maybe no extreme costume change.
I'm not exactly happy you've told me that, because I'm going to be thinking that now when I watch those scenes.
Sorry.
You may have just destroyed it for me. Okay, so join us for our Rise of Skywalker special on our next podcast for all our proper giddy responses to the film, when we'll know more about it than we do now. But before we go, let's answer a listener question. This one's from Rob via Twitter. What's the team's choice for the best run of three consecutive movies by an actor or director? Matt?
Well, Rob, very good question. I love thinking about stuff like this. But the one I'll have to go for is Rob Reiner as director, because this is what always comes to mind when I think about things like this. And he had this absolutely amazing run in the 80s where the three I'll pick would be Stand By Me, followed by The Princess Bride, then When Harry Met Sally.
Wow.
And I just don't think there's been, to be films that different as well, that are all five-star classics, but just completely different genres.
Yeah.
I think it's just incredible. And he's got a couple more either side of that that you could add in if you wanted to run longer than three. So, that's the winner for me.
Okay, I'm a little bit worried that's just it's hard to beat. Yeah,
it.
I think that was a mic drop. So, come on, Jack.
Well, I love a good epic, and the master of epics is David Lean. So my three would probably be Bridge Over the River Kwai, into Lawrence of Arabia, into Doctor Zhivago. Three films I absolutely adore, especially like Lawrence of Arabia is one of my favourite films, if not potentially my favourite film of all time.
Really?
And then you've got two wrapped around it. I know a lot of people have issues with Doctor Zhivago because it is over 3 hours long, but I really love it. I think it's just a great love story, and I mean, I love David Lean's work, so that would probably be my choice. Other than that, I'd probably go for Peter Jackson and Lord of the Rings 1 into Lord of the Rings 2.
Yes,
into
but
Lord
that's
Rings
not
3.
Fair, yeah, because then you'd have to go for like Back to the Future 1, 2, 3 as well. So
yeah, but there's declining quality with that, like not with the Lord of the Rings films. If anything, they just get better and better.
Well, speak for yourself.
Well, go on. Tell us your choice, Jane.
Well, you know, I thought it was a little bit lazy to go for the Oscar winners like you, Jack. So I thought, I bet they go for guys. So I'm going to go for either Joanna Hogg, who hasn't made a bad film yet, and you could go Archipelago, Exhibition, The Souvenir.
Nice.
Cracking. Every single one great. All of them different. All of them say something about the human condition. Or the sort of vanguard of female directors to win an Oscar, Catherine Bigelow, Near Dark, Blue Steel and Point Break. Come on.
Also good.
Okay, so those are our three. Let us know, Rob, what yours are. So if you have a question you'd like us to answer on the podcast, just tweet at us. And your handle is Jack?
You can tweet me at Jack J. Shepherd.
And I'm at Matt Matum.
And I'm at TotalFilm_Jane. We'd also like to hear what you think of this podcast. So, Matt, where should people go to fill in a survey?
Well, we've got a Bitly link. So it's bit.ly/TotalFilmPodcastSurvey.
Yep. And if you fill it in, it only takes 5 to 10 minutes, they tell me. And we will reward your efforts with a free ebook of the Total Film Annual 2020.
Awesome. Bargain.
Totally awesome. Okay, so please go there and let us know. And as always, don't forget, there's 10% off Total Film subscriptions with the code INSIDETF at checkout at www.myfavouritemagazines.co.uk. Okay, so that's all from us. We'd like to thank Greta Gerwig, Saoirse Ronan and Timothy Chalamet for joining us. And we'll see you on the other side of Star Wars. Say goodbye, boys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.